better I introduce myself. I know me better than anybody else, right? I really am grateful to be here. And again, my name is Tarea, T-A-R-E-A. I will let you all know where I got that interesting name. I got that. My mom and dad were kids in Idaho, both of them 16, all of 16. And they went to a movie, Return to Paradise, with Gary Cooper. And his Tahitian daughter's name was Tarea. And so that's what I have been called. And if you go to Tahiti, they'll pronounce it Tiare. And it's hard enough to say Tarea. So we'll just stay with that. It's a unique name, much like I think I'm kind of unique, just like you're unique. Everybody's unique and special in their own ways. I would like, before I start my talk today, to give some recognition to the most important people in my life. And that is to my higher power, whom I call God, my siblings, my extended family, my friends, my ancestors, my fathers, and yes, I did say fathers, and my mother. From my earliest memories, I learned life wasn't going to be the stable, easygoing, secure, healthy thinking life that would bring, you know, great stability and propagate healthy mindset. However, I also knew I was a child that needed to live life to its fullest. What better way to live life to its fullest than taking the highest of highs and the lowest of lows? And I would describe my life much as that, as well as when I met my birth father, I think for the second time after I had last seen him when I was three. He said to me, "The thing I remember most about you, Tarea, is that I would say to you and Tina, I'm going, who wants to come? And in my diaper, I grabbed my coat and headed for the door. And that is the way I've lived my life. Don't worry about what's needing to be done, like clothes and shoes and socks in the middle of winter. Just get your, make sure your diaper's on and your coat is there." And that is how I have approached life. Another story I could tell you about how I've approached life is when I was in junior high, I was a member of Glee Club. And when you go into Glee, you have to sing for the teacher, and he tells you whether you're a soprano, alto, second soprano, second alto, or whatever you are. Well, he told me that I was an alto, and I said, "Oh, no, I'm a soprano." And he said, "No, you're an alto." And I said, "But I sing in a quartet, and I sing soprano in the quartet. So I have to be a soprano." So he let me be a soprano. And later on, when I got to the end of the, you know, quarter, you had to do a testing, and he would play the piano, and you would have to sing your part in the different songs that he played that we had learned during that quarter. Well, at the, I was really nervous about it. Very, very nervous, because I really wanted to do a good job. And he said to me at the end of my repertoire, "Oh, I've never had a student that sang every part in all the songs." I was nervous, and I guess I just picked up alto, soprano, second alto, and did that through the whole thing, and I got an A. So I think I'm kind of a jack of all trades, a master of none. And I do really love life, and I really do want to live it to its fullest. As a young child, I don't want to tell you a lot of the things that happened to me because they were very, very difficult and hard. However, they made me who I am. They made me the strong person that I am. And so I won't ignore them, and I will be grateful for them. By the time I was age 3, I was on my third father. My poor mother married my father when she was a week. She had turned 16, and the next week she got married. And he was just 16. So they were making adult decisions while still being children. I didn't care for the fact that I had 3 fathers, but when she married my third father, I was quite happy. I was at the wedding. I remember it all. My first memory was when I was 2.5. I have a memory like an elephant. And so I just remember the wedding and how happy we were to have another daddy. And he was a wonderful man until he wasn't. He was married to my mom for 6 years. And he had, he was raised by his aunt and uncle because his mother had been in and out of the insane asylum off and on all of her life. Well, my mother started noticing strange things, like they would go shopping and there were things in the bag that she didn't buy. And then she started noticing that he couldn't keep a job. And then he started doing really wacky stuff. And he upset with my mother one day because she was going to California to visit because we were living here in Utah. And he molested all 4 of us. I don't remember that molestation. And I think it's because my higher power knew I didn't need to remember that. But I do remember the many nights he came to my bed. And when I was older and Oprah Winfrey said, free yourself, go out and confront those guys, you know, no more secrets, which I was so happy she was doing because there was nothing for us up to that, you know, for people who had been severely, those of us who are in our and older. And so I was very happy that she told us to do that. So I tromped off to Idaho where he was living and I said, hey, I need to talk to you about something. So we were talking and I finally said, you hurt me. It changed my life in many ways. Why would you do that? And he apologized to me for the time he took the 4 of us in the room, and I didn't know about it. But he didn't apologize for the many other times that he would come to my room. And it shocked me so much that there was a situation that I hadn't even remembered that I said, well, thank you very much, goodbye. I only saw him a couple of more times in my life. And because he was such a good man and such a good father in the beginning, it was not hard for me to forgive him. I think it was harder for me to forgive my mother for allowing this in our, you know, to happen to us kids. And isn't that sad that mothers usually get the bigger blame? And she wasn't even aware of it. But I loved his adventurous heart. He took us places you can't even imagine here in Utah. And in those days, when we lived in Holiday, it took us about an hour to get down to the point of the mountain. There was no freeways. There was no anything like that. And there were so many places in Utah to go adventuring. And so it was a great life in many ways for me as a child. But the day that really crunched it for me was the day that my mother was having her birthday, and she and he and friends had planned to go out. He said, "Maria, I'm going to take the kids, and the people that I name are people that are past. The others that are alive, I will use anonymously. I will keep them anonymous, rather." He said, "I'm going to give you some time to get ready. I'm going to take the kids for a drive." Well, it was snowing heavily, and we never went to the mountains in the snow. Ever. But we spent most of our life in the mountains because we only lived 5 minutes. And it was so fun up in the mountains. And so all of a sudden I noticed he stopped and got us a sucker at the store, which was never a thing that he did. And then we started up the mountains. And I thought, we don't do this. And I got this sick feeling in my stomach. And we started up Mill Creek Canyon, and then all of a sudden it started snowing to where I swear I couldn't see. I knew he could see because he was driving very fast. And he said, "Hold on," and he swerved and hit a tree. He broke my sister's nose. We didn't have seatbelts in those days. It dislocated my jaw. I was so worried about my little brothers that were in the back seat and found that they were okay. They were jostled around, but they were okay. And I knew at that moment that he had done that on purpose. And I knew that he was sick, that there were things beyond his ability to handle. You don't do that to children. We had to hitchhike a ride home on the windy, snowy mountain. Somebody stopped and gave us a ride home, blood running everywhere. And my mother was so shocked to see us, and she took us all up to the doctors to check us all out, and then began divorce proceedings not too long after that. I never told my mother, can somebody get me a drink of water? I never told my mother about the molestations. I think I didn't want to already upset the apple cart when it was so upset already. This was her third divorce. And she was married for 6 years, so in 9 years she had three divorces, and here in Utah. In 1964, it was even earlier than that, because that's when I left and went to California, and I was 12 then. So, I mean, we're talking about late 50s. You know, you just didn't see a lot of divorces. It was the plentiful 50s and 60s, after all, and it was just all about family, and it was a wonderful life here. It really was. I loved the parades in Salt Lake. I loved everything about Liberty Park. I loved everything about skating on Utah Lake when it froze over. I loved so many, many things. And that is when my mind, as I got older, I realized that is when my mind started separating. I had adjustments of thinking so that the reality was here. But I worked it through so that I could live in the optimistic thoughts that I was very optimistic, and I would find a way to live over here to make everything okay, even when things were not okay. I didn't like my mother. I didn't like my mother from, I think, the time I was about 5. I adored her, but I didn't like her. I didn't like the things that she did. I didn't like her behaviors. I didn't like some of the punishment that she issued us. It was never fair. It was over the top. As we grew older and moved to Holiday, and there were willows that were growing, and I'm sure many of you who grew up here know about going out and cutting your own willow, right? And darn, you don't cut the little ones. They sting even more than the big ones. But they used to leave welts on us, on our legs, about this big. And sometimes they even bled. And it never bothered her a bit to see us with that. And she'd take us swimming, and here we were in bathing suits with welted legs. And you would think that she would be so embarrassed she wouldn't take us then, you know? But that wasn't the case. She did. Well, after the divorce, she had to go to work. So she found a job as a waitress. And my grandmother came to stay with us for about 6 months. And my grandmother was from Holland. And so she spoke half English and half Dutch. Now, I love Dutch. And if I have time, I'll tell you a poem in Dutch that she used to teach, that she taught me. And I loved my grandmother. She was a quiet, sweet, very classy lady. Very different from my mother. My mother was beautiful, but very lively and unpredictable. And so when Grandma was there taking care of us, we kind of pushed her a little bit sometimes, the four of us. And one time we set up the pool, and she says, "I don't think you should be setting up this pool." And that's when, I mean, you should have seen the pools in those days, right? "Oh, no, Grandma, we can do it." Oh, we set up that pool, and it fell, and wouldn't you know, it flooded the whole basement. And my grandmother said, "I told them they shouldn't do it." And my mother wasn't happy. After my grandmother left, then the watching of these two precious boys were my sister and I's. We were all of, I think, 10 and a half and 9. And they were 4 and 3. You can imagine the responsibilities that we had and some of the difficult things and times that we had with my mother being working, being tired, not happy about her life situation, and angry most of the time. She was a very particular housekeeper. An organizer, if you know the Dutch people, they even wash their streets, not just their gutters, they wash their streets. And they also have right ways to do things. And if you're going to do it, you're going to do it right the first time, or you're doing it again and again and again. So one day my sister and her friend got the scissors out of the drawer. And Mom said, "Make sure you put those away." Well, she put them away. Mom, a couple of days later, looked in the drawer to get her scissors because she sewed. And she says, "I can't find my scissors, Tina. Where are my scissors?" And Tina says, "I know I put them away." Oh, I'm not using her name anonymously. She's not dead. She's my sister, and she comes to Al-Anon, and most people know her. So I'm sure she'll be okay with me using her name. In fact, she'd probably be upset if I didn't give her credit. So anyway, she looked all over for those scissors. I remember her looking clear into the night. And I kept thinking, oh, that poor thing, I better go help her. So I'd help her for a little bit. Couldn't find him, so I'd go play. Help a little bit. Couldn't find him, go play. Well, by the next day, my mom said, either you find my scissors or don't be here when I get home. How would you feel? Now, she looked all day for those scissors. And we knew my mom would be home about 3 o'clock. And I kept checking in with her because I was playing with the boys and keeping them busy while she was looking for scissors. And I came to her and I said, have you found the scissors yet? No. And I'd check in again. No. So I kind of lost time for a little while I was out with the boys, and I see her come outside, and she says, okay, Taria, I have to leave. You're going to have to watch the boys. And I said, well, you're not leaving by yourself. And she says, well, I told her, I said, I'm coming with you. And she said to me, you can't. Somebody has to watch the boys. Now, this is the way a 10-year-old mine thought. Well, we'll take the boys. We love them more than she does anyway. So she said, okay. She finally relented, and she let me take the boys with us. And we went in and packed a paper bag with some underwear and a change of clothes. And then we headed to the field next door and picked green fruit, because we knew we'd have to feed the boys, but that's all that was available to us. So we started walking, and we walked, I don't know if any of you know Little Cottonwood Canyon, but we walked right to where it goes way, the road goes way up the hill and then into the canyon from Holiday. And we walked and got halfway up that hill, and I said to my sister, look over there. And there was a pair of flip-flops that would fit one of my brothers. And I said, see there? God's watching over us. He knows. And he'll take care of us. And we put those shoes in that bag and marched ourselves up the rest of that hill and said, well, where do we go now? And that was a good mile and a half from our house. And we decided, oh, that's right. Our family friends just lived up a little ways by there. Let's go over and see them. They'll let us in, and they'll give us a drink of water and maybe a sandwich or something, you know. Oh, we just felt so good about knowing that we could take care of ourselves. So we get to our friend's house, and they find us on the front step, and they go, what are you guys doing here? And we told them what had happened. And we said, and they said, oh, well, you come right in, and I'll tell you what, let me have your bag, and you go and play with the kids, because they were our best friends anyway. So and before we left, we said to them, please don't tell our mother. Well, an hour later, her car pulled up in front of their house, and my sister said, Mom's here. And I said, they ratted us out. And they called us into the house, and my mom acted just normal and everything. And they said, it's time for you to go home. Mom's here to take you home. Gave us our bag and headed us into the car. Well, my mom got halfway down that road that is so tall to climb, and she got to the bottom of it by the old mill, and it all began. How dare you? How dare you do this to me? you left the house and I thought Ron, who was my third father, came and took you. How dare you scare me like that? And then just went on and told us what terrible children we were. I don't remember what happened afterwards, but I do know that there was never an explanation, an apology, or any kind of I'm sorry. It was never mentioned again, except between Tina and I. We had a hard time forgetting that one. At 8, my mom threw me out of the house in the middle of the night. Oh, these are all my good stories, by the way. And she said, get out of here, I don't want you anymore. And I said, hysterically, where do I go? I have nowhere to go. Where do I go? And she said, I don't care. She walked in the house and slammed the door shut. To this day, I don't know what I had done so wrong to deserve this. And to the day she died, she never said that she had done it. I just had a vivid imagination. Finally, she came out of the door and she threw a coat at me because it was snowing. My feet were freezing, no shoes on. And she finally threw the coat out at me and said, put this on. I'm sorry. And then slammed the door again as she went in. I really then was beyond crying and beyond, you know, just being panicked. I just stood there, you know, like in shock. And finally she came back and she said, fine, go sleep in the garage. Well, I was terribly afraid of mice. I was sure that they were going to do what they did to everybody else on the farm where my mother grew up in Idaho and crawl up my pant leg and bite me on the butt. I just knew that they would do that. They were fierce beings. And so I knew there were mice in the garage, and I thought, oh, of all places to have to go sleep, but hallelujah, I'm indoors. I found 2 wheat bags that weighed about 25 pounds each, and with my little body, I pulled one on top of the other, curled up in a fetal position, and cried myself to sleep. Sometime during the night, I think it was my father who had come home, and I think my mother had told him or something. Somebody had carried me into the house and put me to bed, and I didn't wake up. But I did in the morning, and I wondered how I got there. It was never mentioned. It was never spoken about. There was never an apology. It was like, you deserve this. And as a child, your mind thinks, do I really deserve this? I guess I'm that bad of a kid, you know? I am half my father, I am half my mother, and she's rotten to the core, and my birth father, the way she described him, he's rotten to the core. I'm 50% of each of them, I must be too. And that began my years feeling low self-esteem, feeling unworthy. And yet somewhere inside of me, I had a confidence that I couldn't explain. I know where it comes from now. I know that my higher power was watching over me, was aware of me, and knew what I needed. And I'm going to see if I can find out where I'm at. One of the things that I'm so grateful for is my sister. I wish she were here tonight. She was going to try and make it. But she and my grandmother during the years that my, the months that my grandmother was there, I would beg them to sleep with me. And it was because I didn't want to be alone. I couldn't live alone. And to have the comfort of them sleeping with me in this little teeny twin bed was more than sometimes my sister could take. And my grandmother, the blessed woman that she was, never, ever complained. But I also noticed she was never in my bed in the morning when I woke up. You know, there are never bad times without good times. Opposition is the way of our life. And if we're going to have bad times, you could count on having some good times. They may come later in life. They may come in a completely different way than you expected. But God has taught me, to whatever degree I have suffered, I have been blessed. My sister and I, at the age of, I think, 11 and 10 by now, my mother started dating. And she was dating several fellas, and we fell in love with every one of them that came by. They were so good looking. And it was so fun to see my mother get dressed up, because she was such a striking, beautiful woman. And it was fun to see her go out and have some fun, because then we knew that she was going to be in a better mood when she got home. And so those years were a little bit better years for us. And one guy that came to date her happened to be 6'6". And I had never seen anybody that tall in my life. And we all kept saying, oh, he's a nice guy. He's a really nice guy. But we're in love with somebody else. My mother was dating another man that every time he came to see us, and he is dead, but I will leave his name anonymous, he would bring us a Barbie. Oh, my gosh. We were the first girls in the neighborhood to have a Barbie. And then he would bring us Beatle albums when the Beatles came out. We were the first kids in the block to have a Beatle album. And my sister and I would play for hours Barbies in the basement, creating a safe, secure place for us. And it was, I'm so thankful for my sister. I'm thankful that God gave us to each other. I think we were each other's strength in many ways. Well, as she kept, the tall guy came a couple of times, then we didn't see him again. His name was Reed. And the other guy just kept coming around, and we kept falling in more and more in love with him. And we just thought, you know, he was the cat's meow. And one day we were all having fun in the living room, and I noticed my mother's blouse was up a little, and I could see she was wearing maternity pants. And I said, Mom, and I was laughing at her, what are you doing in those pregnant pants? And immediately I got tugged by the arm into the bedroom, and I thought I'd done something wrong. And she said, I'm having a baby. Well, that didn't sit well with me. One thing you'll know about me is I'm a truth seeker. I don't like lies. I hate to be lied to. And I want the truth told to me. And yet there was such deception in my life that I think that many times I got to where I abhorred being lied to or being deceived. It just didn't sit well with me at all. I was very upset about the situation and asked my mom why she would do something like this. And then the optimistic me took over, and I said, oh, they'll get married, it's okay. Well, that was okay until the day my cousin came to visit. And she started criticizing my mom. And remember, I adored my mother. And I said to her, I said to my cousin, well, she's going to take care of this. They're going to get married. And she said, they are not. And I said, why? And she said, he's married. Well, that challenged me a lot. And I didn't take that very well. And when my mother came home from work and we talked with her about it, we found out, sure enough, that my cousin was right. And this man never did marry my mother. He couldn't marry my mother. My mother would have destroyed him, and he knew it. He couldn't have been the person for her. Well, soon right after that, my mother moved us from Holiday to Sugar House, and we knew that we were going to a faraway place and a definite downgrade. She was pretty poor as a waitress, and so Christmas would come and we would be allowed one gift. And after having had so many gifts given to us, we were getting pretty spoiled. And so we thought that was just horrible to get just one gift for Christmas. And right after that, the baby was born, and we saw Mr. Anonymous a couple of times when he came to see the baby. And then he didn't come anymore, and I asked my mom what happened. Because I was missing him. I loved him too. And my heart was breaking. And she said, he won't marry me and divorce his wife. So I gave him that ultimatum that if he didn't do that, that it was over. And so it was over. And here's my mom now with four kids and a five-month-old baby. And who shows up but this wonderful 6-foot, 6-inch tall, gentle giant that we had known from before. And he took my mom out for a couple of dates, and then my mom sat us down and said, Reed would like to marry me. How do you feel about it? This was the first time in my life I had been ever asked how I felt about anything. And are you kidding? I was going to give her my whole opinion. And she said, and by the way, he'll take us to California. Oh, that clinched the whole deal. Good. I get to get out of here. I get to forget these memories. I get to forget all this stuff. I'm going to California. I'm going to have a new father. He's a gentle giant. I think that this is going to be just a perfect thing for me. And I was thrilled about it. He took us to California, and life did change. It was better. My mother was happier. I liked her a little bit more. And we had a pretty good life. He was a truck driver, so he had a little bit more money. And I think that God knew that, one, it had to be somebody that would really love my mother. And when he had first seen my mother, he told us at the Ramada in the restaurant, when he first saw her, he was with his buddy, and he said, I'm going to marry that woman one of these days. And that's exactly what he did. It was years later, but he married my mom. And I also found out that it wasn't just that he was marrying her, but that he felt that she needed to take us out of the bad situation we were in. Because she was waking us up on alternate mornings, Tina and I, at 4:30 in the morning, laying with the baby
while she got ready for work. Then she would nurse the baby and put the baby in what we called carriers at that time. And then the baby would nap. Then the person who had been up at 4:30 would wake all the rest of the kids up, and we'd go up and eat breakfast. And then the person up early fed the baby the mush, and then she walked her down the street to the babysitter. So that was a pretty big, wild responsibility, a brand new little baby, and trying to take care of that plus two boys. And when we had moved, my sister started going to junior high, and I got left alone with the boys, and that was not a good thing. I was not prepared to be alone. She was my strength. I was her strength. She wasn't prepared to be alone. I found that life became so difficult at this new school, where I was bullied in some ways to the point of suicidal thoughts. They had no idea what I had come from. They had no idea what I had been through. But I said shit one day, and they decided that I couldn't be played with or talked to for 3 weeks, that would teach me my lesson. Well, it taught me a lesson. It taught me I didn't want to live anymore. And so for 3 nights, I knelt at my bed and asked God to take me home. On the third night that I pleaded and begged for him to take me home, I got up off my knees and got into bed. And at some point during the night, I was awakened by a very special, sacred experience. And just like difficult experiences that we don't often talk to about in depth, I won't share with you in depth the experience I had that night. But when I woke up that morning, I was a different person. I knew I was loved. I knew that there was peace to be had. And I knew I would be okay. I want you to know that to this day, and all through my life, I have hung on to that witness, and it has made me who I am. I could have been a very different person. I could have fallen into many different things. My brothers did. The way they coped with what happened to us as children. They drank and they drugged until they couldn't remember. It was hard for me to see them drinking and drugging. But one thing that I had learned on my way to school, I'd forgot to tell you about, was I found a way to like living. I found a day-old bakery. And so I scrounged up some pennies one day, and on the way to school, I took the kids to school, the boys to school, and I came back to the bakery, and I bought with my pennies some day-old baked goods. I think you could have, for 5 cents, you got 2 day-old brownies. Oh my gosh, I found my reason for living. I found my comfort. I found everything that I needed to get me up out of that bed and get me to school in the mornings. Well, when my brothers had started drinking and drugging, and they had lost, my one brother had lost his wife, had lost his children over it. My other brother luckily married and later lost his wife. I realized in my late 20s, that I was doing the same thing that they were doing, only with a different substance. And then one that would kill me a lot, you know, give me a little bit longer grace period and kill me a lot slower than what alcohol and drugs would do. So when I realized that I was doing exactly the same thing they were, I decided I needed help. And that is when I found 12 steps. The first meeting I went to was glorious. I felt like I knew those 12 steps already. I felt like I'd heard them before. They were a part of me already. That was that confidence that I had inside of me. I recognized it. And when I read step one, step two, and step three, I knew I was home. That was 40 years ago. And I was blessed to be able to attend meetings until we moved from where we were in California. And we moved to, by this time I had a husband and three kids. And we moved to Utah because we thought we'd like to raise the children here. We happened to land in a wonderful place out in West Jordan, a brand new subdivision that had the most magnificent people I'd ever met, who guide and led us into life experiences that I never would have had anywhere else. They were amazing people. Again, my higher power working in my life. We had our fourth child there, and then my husband called me one day as I'm at the doctor's office with a sick child, and he said, "I've been laid off. I'm out of work as of today." I said, "Don't worry. Go home. I'll be there soon. Everything will be all right." I couldn't even explain to you at that time the blessings of that unemployment. We learned so many things. We learned faith like you can't believe. Our car died, and he couldn't get to interviews. And then all of a sudden, it resurrected itself. I mean, I could go through stories like that for that whole year. And then my mom and dad came to visit in Utah and said, and it was my dad's idea, it wasn't my mother's, "You need to come home with us. You need to come home to California. You can find jobs there, you can live with us, and until you can get back up on your feet financially, you come and stay with us." Both he and I knew that it was the right thing to do, and so we went there. And while we were in Utah, there was no program for me. So I was excited to go back to California because I could get back into program. And one of the things that I have to say about programs for AA, OA, NA, I don't care what 12-step program you're in, nowadays you can find it anywhere. Back then, we couldn't find it everywhere. And we are so spoiled. And I just have to remember not to be spoiled, but to be grateful that I can go to a number of meetings in 1 week, and I don't have to travel far at all. My dad was a wonderful person to my sister and I. He was my fourth father. I consider him my fifth father because I really consider Mr. Anonymous my fourth father. And so I had five fathers, and I did change names with every father. We all did. So that was quite interesting. But my brothers, I finally would talk to them about AA and going. And my littlest brother, Ricky, decided that he would try it. And he went to AA, and he was sober and clean for 15 years. My other brother, Mark, the older brother, never did accept AA in his life. He died in a very terrible place after his wife divorced him within months. He had found a place to live with other addicts and drinkers, and he would pass out on the floor that was covered with cat feces because they had cats, and he got a blood disease from the feces. And that's where we found him, was in the hospital. And when he passed away, I said to my family, the pain is over. He's home. I was the only girl. My sister had moved to Utah, so I was the only girl around my brothers. My littlest brother, who was born with my fourth father. Sorry, it's so confusing. Anyway, he loved those two boys. He had grown up down in Southern California, separate from us, because my parents had moved down there. And they were much younger than we were. And he came up with his wife, and he loved those boys, but he also learned some of the bad habits. And when Mark died, half of him died. And he is still alive. He's my only brother alive. And he is an alcoholic. And thank heavens that I've had Al-Anon for 8 years. And I can treat him differently than I did my other brothers. I was on them all the time, counting their things, doing this, getting their pills, calling their doctors. I was doing it. Anything I could do to help them. And nothing I did ever helped him. My little brother, who was clean for 15 years, was a plumber and got a forklift in his knee and was off for quite a while and started having to use drugs and began using drugs again improperly. And that eventually took his life. He stoked the fire one night, and because he couldn't live around people and maintain sobriety and stuff, he moved up into the Gold Hills, up into the mountains of California, and lived by himself. We would go up all the time and play and have wonderful times. My brothers taught me tremendous things. I am talented because of them. Eventually stoked up the fire that night. The house caught on fire, and he burned in the fire because the other thing he used to do was take all of his meds so he could sleep, and he didn't wake up. And so I have lost two brothers to the disease of alcohol and drugs, and I'm grateful I haven't lost myself yet. My God was kind enough to, in many ways, take, as in step three. No. Which step am I on? I know it's a different step. Anyway, he took away that character weakness of mine, and I will forever be grateful. I was 307 pounds at one time, and I'm at least 100 pounds under that, so I'm not going to give you the whole deal. You wouldn't want to know anyway. My husband and I, when we retired, we left California and came to Utah. That's how we got here. And I did not go to a program for about 2 years. And finally, my life became so unmanageable that I knew that I better find program. And so I said to him, where do you want me to go? And within that week, I heard Al-Anon twice. And I said, say no more. And so I have been a grateful Al-Anon member for 8 years. I wish I'd had Al-Anon a lot earlier. I could have learned to live with myself and love myself, like myself, take care of myself, a lot earlier in life. But as we all know, God brings us to where we need to be when we need to be there. And I probably would not have been ready. And I was ready then. I really had hit bottom. I really thought that my husband and I's relationship, excuse me, I'm going to tell this, he's here, but I was not tolerating it well. And I walked into Al-Anon thinking that maybe there would be a possible divorce. And I want you to know, this last year we celebrated our 50th anniversary. Is that right? It was a miracle, yes, but a great miracle. I have 4 children, and they're wonderful children. They have helped me so much. I wish that I could learn as quickly as they learn. I don't, and they sometimes get impatient with that. I think as traumatized children, they're learning more and more that the limbic brain and the prefrontal cortex is not connected, so we live in a lot of fight and flight. And it was very hard for me to learn to go from that brain to the prefrontal, which is rationalized living. And I'm so grateful I'm there, but there are still times that I struggle, but my children are far better people than I am and are wonderful, wonderful kids. In closing, I think that there is just one thing that I would like to say, and that is that I sometimes in meeting refer to my higher power as they. And I would like to explain to you why I say they. I have God. But I also have other people. And one group of people that I love and cherish are my ancestors who came before me, who are concerned about me, who love me and want the best for me. And I think we often, through cell memory, carry their burdens, their habits, their difficulties, and we have to work them out in this life. And if we can work them out well and bring healthy thinking to ourselves, we bring it to them as well as we take it to our posterity. And so I would like to dedicate this talk to my ancestors, who 40 of them walked across the plains and helped settle many of the cities here in Utah. I'm so very proud of them. Some of them gave their lives. Some of them died with wounds from being so frozen. But I know that my God was in all of this, and that their faith has even strengthened mine. And trust in the Lord is my greatest gift. And I say these things and hope that you can receive them. Take what you will and leave the rest. Thank you.